Welcome to the January 2025 News Bulletin podcast for commercial shipping marine surveyors, put together by the International Institute of Marine Surveying. We open our first podcast of the year with an introduction from IIMS CEO Mike Schwartz. Dear colleague, Happy New Year and welcome to 2025. Let me start my first column of the new year on a slightly downbeat note by posing this question for your consideration: are we witnessing the death of indoor boat shows? A recent announcement confirming the cancellation of the Paris Boat Show scheduled for April 2025 is disappointing, especially as it comes hard on the heels of a similar decision made late last year to cancel Boatlife 2025 in the UK. The Fédération des Industries Nautiques, the French Federation for the Nautical Sector, made the announcement that the Nautic en Seine Boat Show will not take place. The Federation says the decision was made in light of current market conditions, which Finn believes no longer guarantees the full success of the show's first edition. Finn noted that the troubled project, which was postponed from its original October 2024 dates, was developed following extensive consultations in the first half of 2023. The show was originally conceived as a reinvention of the Nautic Paris Boat Show that was held indoors at the Porte de Versailles. This brings me on to Boatlife 2025, which was due to take place at the NEC, Birmingham, UK in February this year. Pendigo Events and the NEC Group were unable to maintain the momentum of the small indoor show, which had been a success in previous editions. The cancellation announcement of the event was made in a terse press release, with no explanation provided, as follows: Pendigo Events and the NEC Group would like to thank all those who were due to attend for their interest in and support of Boatlife 2025 and look forward to welcoming them to another show soon. And it seems that the Mighty Boot in Dusseldorf, still Europe's largest indoor show, is also facing challenges. The Hansa Group, local to the venue, announced that it would be attending the German show with a reduced team, exhibiting only the Fjord brand. Likewise, a number of cruising catamaran builders have announced that they will not be exhibiting boats at the boot show. Florida-based Ibex and METSTRADE in Amsterdam, both indoor shows, have reported excellent attendances in recent months. So, what is it that they appear to be doing right? Perhaps as more marine equipment-based trade exhibitions, they are immune. In my past life I ran big exhibitions, so I know a thing or two about them. I also know the angst one goes through having to cancel an event, so they have my sympathies. The revenue generated from selling stand space would ordinarily more than cover the setup and build costs of the event, whilst sponsorship and ticket sales from a public event would be the icing on the cake. So, if manufacturers cannot be persuaded to exhibit their boats, there can be no show. It is a sad state of affairs and one that can afflict all event organizers. Clearly, trading and market conditions are tough and finding new avenues and incentives to attract exhibitors is hard. Look what happened a few years ago when the once mighty London Boat Show finally collapsed. It was replaced over time by a handful of more targeted, niche events in the UK's capital. Perhaps the days of the big indoor boat shows really are numbered. The IIMS Safety and Loss Prevention Briefings Compendium. In my role, I am fortunate, if that is the right word, to see a continual stream of marine incidents and accidents news passing through my desk each and every day. They are of varying degrees of severity. Some are just a minor bump or simple grounding, others are far more dramatic involving multiple loss of life along with valuable marine assets too. This was my inspiration 4 years ago to launch the Safety and Loss Prevention Briefings Compendium. If you have not yet seen and read a copy, it is, as you can imagine, a tough read, but one that I think is essential for marine surveyors and others allied to our industry. So, it is with great pleasure that I can announce the launch edition 4 of the IIMS Safety and Loss Prevention Briefings Compendium. There is a wealth of safety briefings information, coupled with incident and accident reports as well as vital loss prevention guidance and advice from the leading P&I clubs. I thoroughly recommend this publication to you. The publication is available in downloadable PDF format or in online e-reader magazine format. The choice is yours, but I urge you to grab a copy. You can download the compendium through the IIMS website. Aims for 2025. So, what lies ahead and what can you expect from IIMS in 2025? I am tempted to say more of the same, but that sounds rather uninspiring. We are scoping out a number of training events, details of which will be forthcoming soon. I can also inform you that I am planning trips to New Zealand, Australia and Singapore with the intention of holding events in all three countries in July. Watch for more information, but my first overseas journey is to Hamilton, Ontario to join our colleagues and friends at the IIMS Canada 2025 conference, dinner and AGM on 27-28 February. The local committee has lined up what looks to be two great days of conferencing that is open to face-to-face delegates as well as online attendees too. Members and non-members are welcome and encouraged to attend. Full details can be found at iimscanada.ca/events. Perhaps I will get to meet you at an IIMS event somewhere in the world this year, either in person or as a virtual delegate. Survey well, Mike. For our first report of the year, the Liberia Maritime Authority has issued a new marine advisory to draw the attention of ship owners, operators, inspectors, masters, and crew to the hazard seafarers are exposed to from the storage and moving of heavy steel plates for planned ship maintenance. Liberia has recently investigated two fatal marine casualties related to the unsafe storage and movement of heavy steel plates for future repairs and maintenance. The crew members were crushed while handling the heavy steel plates in narrow places. The first case occurred while the vessel was moored in port. A toolbox meeting was held by the chief officer and crew. The crew were then to retrieve steel plates that were kept in the steering gear room for a maintenance job. The trainee fitter went alone to the steering gear room and was later found unconscious, stuck between the steel plates and a steel shelf. The second case occurred while the vessel was underway. A toolbox meeting was held by the chief officer with the five seafarers involved to discuss the movement of nine heavy steel plates from the weather deck to an interior storage location in the forecastle. The risk of the plates slipping and injuring a crew member was discussed. The plan was to place the plates slightly inclined vertically, with the upper edge resting on the passageway wall, before strapping them with a latching belt. Moving the steel plates was carried out successfully until the ninth plate. After the eighth plate was moved and before a coffee break, the bosun secured the plates with the latching belt and added a wooden block across to the other side of the passageway. Upon returning from the coffee break, the bosun removed the wooden block and latching belt while the rest of the crew moved the ninth plate. The steel plates then fell towards the bosun and crushed his chest, resulting in the fatal injuries. The investigations noted a lack of full awareness of the hazards associated with loading, moving, and storing heavy objects and equipment without taking necessary precautions before an operation, activity commences. Companies should take every opportunity when conducting an ISM audit or other visits to ships in their fleet to ensure the crew is following the company's safety instructions, are adequately trained regarding situational awareness, and that each seafarer understands their obligation to speak up and to stop an operation if they feel it is unsafe. Our second report focuses on a series of human errors caused the grounding and eventual sinking of HMNZS Manaunui off the coast of Samoa on the 5th of October 2024, according to an interim Court of Inquiry report released by the Royal New Zealand Navy. During survey operations, the ship struck a reef, capsized, and sank the next morning. Fortunately, all crew members survived. Chief of Navy Rear Admiral Garen Golding said the main cause was the failure to disengage the ship's autopilot. He explained the crew didn't realize Manaunui was still in autopilot mode. They mistakenly thought the ship failed to respond due to a thruster control issue. The report added this misjudgment led the ship to continue its course toward land despite efforts to turn it. Rear Admiral Golding mentioned that several contributing factors beyond the primary human errors were identified. These will be examined in more detail during the next phase of the inquiry, which is expected to conclude in early 2025. Next, it's back to the Liberia Maritime Authority, which has updated Marine Notice SAF-004 on lifeboat and emergency drills. The amended notice includes changes on drills and training sessions. In regard to training, every crew member should take part in at least one abandoned ship and one fire drill each month. This increases to at least each week for passenger ships. However, the entire does not have to be involved in every drill. Each lifeboat should be lowered and maneuvered at least once every 3 months during an abandoned ship drill. There are different requirements specifically for davit-launched lifeboats and lifeboats arranged for free-fall launching. Drills should include methods for deploying marine evacuation systems if a ship has them. The notice includes specific guidance for drills of different types of lifeboats, including davit-launched lifeboats drills, free-fall lifeboats drills, guidelines for simulated launching of free-fall lifeboats, and alternative methods for lifeboat drills on MODUs. You can find the notice on the IIMS website. Up next, the International Association of Classification Societies has published a new unified requirement, URM 85, providing the maritime industry with its first comprehensive technical guidelines for type approval testing of synthetic materials used in AFT most propeller shaft bearings. Recognized as a critical component of a vessel's propulsion system, these bearings are essential for long-term operational safety and efficiency. The new requirement establishes a robust framework for type approval testing, setting new benchmarks for safety, reliability, and performance to address a vital gap in maritime standards. Furthermore, it outlines essential criteria to be met during type approval testing, outlining key areas to ensure material performance and durability in real-world conditions. Key points include type approval testing requirements, material properties compliance, accredited testing facilities, wear testing procedures, environmental conditions for testing, and type approval certificate issuance. Following the successful completion of testing and submission of technical documentation, the Classification Society will issue a type approval certificate. This certificate signifies product quality and conformity with IACS standards, instilling confidence among shipowners and operators. IACKS invites designers, manufacturers, operators and owners to adopt these requirements into their products and vessels, contributing to a unified approach for safer and more reliable maritime operations. You can read the full requirement on the IACKS website at iacs.org.uk. And another report from IACKS, which has released guidance on CO2 fire extinguishing systems in alcohol-fueled ship machinery spaces. It states machinery space and fuel preparation space where methyl-ethyl alcohol-fueled engines or fuel pumps are arranged should be protected by an approved fixed fire extinguishing system in accordance with SOLIS regulations. The system should also be able to extinguish methyl-ethyl alcohol fires. The interpretation says that where CO2 is used to suppress a fire within a machinery space or fuel preparation space in a methyl-ethyl alcohol-fueled ship, the CO2 used needs to fill at least 50% of the largest space protected, including the machinery space casing. It also says that as an alternative, a risk assessment could be carried out to confirm the suitability of the fire extinguishing system in machinery spaces, including the fixed gas system and fixed local application system. This risk assessment may be subject to approval by the administration. The interpretation is set to take effect on ships contracted for construction on or after the 1st of January 2026. You can download the guidance from the IIMS news page. Next, the Australian Maritime Safety Authority has extended the deadline for vessels to comply with National Standard for Commercial Vessels Part 2 Standard for Weather-Tight and Water-Tight Integrity. From the 1st of September this year, the NSCVC 2 will become mandatory for all new domestic commercial vessels that have a requirement to comply with Marine Order 503. This standard aims to enhance safety by setting out clear standards for maintaining weather-tight and water-tight integrity. The date has been extended to provide industry additional time to transition to the standard. Find out more from iimsaustralia.com.au. Next up, the International Maritime Organization held its 10th session of the Subcommittee on Carriage of Cargoes and Containers. During the session, a working group reviewed draft revised recommendations for personnel entering enclosed spaces aboard ships. They incorporated various comments and proposals, resulting in a comprehensive and updated set of guidelines, which BIM Company has summarized below. BIM CO said the revised recommendations emphasize several vital areas to enhance safety during enclosed space entry, including enclosed space hazards and mitigation. The areas focused on included risk assessment, cargo safety, oxygen depletion and toxic atmospheres, space security and signage, and crew training. Comprehensive training for crew members is essential, especially considering the ongoing revision of the STCW Convention and Code. The revised recommendations mention what kind of training is needed for the relevant crew members. Training should address specific hazards, such as carbon dioxide and other toxic gases, as well as cargo-related risks and oxygen-depleting cargoes. You can read more at bimco.org, within the Insights and Info section. Next, the Marine Department of the Hong Kong SAR has published note on the amendments to the International Life-Saving Appliance Code and the revised recommendation on testing of life-saving appliances. The amendments, which will enter force on the 1st of January 2026, decisions made following the IMO's Maritime Safety Committee 108th session earlier this year. Chapter 2 of the LSA Code has been amended to improve the minimum in water performance standards for SOLIS life jackets. Chapter 4 of the LSA Code is amended to ensure adequate safety standards for lifeboats and rescue boats fitted with single fall and hook systems. The amendments to Chapter 6 of the LSA Code address the issue on the lowering speed of fully loaded survival craft and rescue boats. In view of the above-mentioned change in Chapter 2 and 6 of the amended LSA Code, the revised recommendation with regard to the test of SOLIS life jackets and fully loaded survival craft and rescue boats is therefore modified by Resolution MSC 563-108 accordingly. The amendments will be applied to life-saving appliances installed on or after 1 January 2026, where the expression installed on or after 1 January 2026 means, for ships for which the building contract is placed on or after 1 January 2026, or in the absence of the contract, the keels of which are laid or which are at a similar stage of construction on or after 1 January 2026. All installations of the specified type on board those ships, or for ships other than those ships specified in, A, above, all installations of the specified type, having a contractual delivery date for the equipment or, in the absence of a contractual delivery date to the ship, actually delivered to the ship on or after 1 January 2026. Next, Denmark is set to ban the discharge of scrubber water from ships in its territorial waters starting July 1 this year. The new law, introduced in the Danish Parliament, aims to address marine pollution caused by harmful substances released during ship exhaust cleaning. Scrubber water is a byproduct of open scrubbers, which use water to clean exhaust gases before dumping them into the sea. This water contains heavy metals and tars like lead, cadmium, and anthracene, which may harm marine life and humans by gathering on the seafloor and entering the food chain. The Danish government also plans to tighten regulations for closed-loop scrubbers, which store the used water for disposal at port facilities. Ships will need to use low sulfur fuel or manage scrubber waste more responsibly. The ban will be implemented up to 14 nautical miles off Denmark's coast. While Denmark cannot enforce the law in international waters, the government is working for similar bans in the Baltic and North Seas through regional agreements and the International Maritime Organization. In our next report, the Marine Department of the Hong Kong SAR has published an information notice advising on changes to Chapter 2-2 and Chapter 5 of International Convention for the Safety of Life at Sea, which will enter into force on 1 January 2026. The amendments were adopted by the Maritime Safety Committee of the International Maritime Organization at its 108th session. You can read the summarized amendments on our website. Next up, the Australian Maritime Safety Authority has now made the updated Marine Order 504, Certificates of Operation, National Law 2024 available. The Marine Order contains several changes to SMS requirements. These changes take effect on 1 June this year, allowing domestic commercial vessel owners and operators time to prepare for and implement the new requirements. Key changes to SMS requirements include simplifying SMS requirements for smaller, less complex vessels and operations, clarifying and strengthening fatigue management, enhancing the management of risks from drug and alcohol use, ensuring that roles and responsibilities for the safe operation of the vessel are clear, updating the assembly station requirements in the vessel's emergency plan, aligning procedures for onboard operations and emergency preparedness with risk, addressing operational risks to vessel stability, and amending the certificate of operation renewal criteria to reduce administrative burden. In addition to the key changes listed, there will also be some minor administrative and editorial changes to improve the Marine Order. You can find out more on the IIMS Australia website. Up next, the International Organization for Standardization has published a new standard for methanol as fuel for marine applications. The document, prepared in cooperation with ship owners, ship operators, national standards bodies, classification societies, fuel testing services, engine and fuel cell designers, marine fuel suppliers, methanol producers, governmental organizations, and other technical organizations. It was created to meet the requirements for methanol supplied as marine fuel on a worldwide basis for consumption on board ships. It specifies three categories of methanol: marine methanol grade A, MMA, marine methanol grade B, MMB, and marine methanol grade C, MMC. Handling and using products specified in this document can be hazardous if suitable precautions are not observed. This document does not address all the safety and health considerations associated with its use. Methanol has a low flashpoint product, typically 11 degrees centigrade. As such, it is the responsibility of the users to establish appropriate safety and health practices and to determine the applicability of regulatory limitations before use. You can buy the document from ISO's website. Next, the International Association of Classification Societies published a new Unified Interpretation UISC 307 on hydrocarbon gas detection and built high-level alarms in cargo pump rooms. The UI is set to be implemented by IACKS societies on ships contracted to be built on or after 1 January 2026. The interpretation says, characteristics of the cargoes and their vapors should be taken into consideration to determine the type and arrangement of detectors. A high level of liquid in the pump room should activate a continuous audible and visual alarm signal in the pump room, cargo control room, engine control room, and on the navigation bridge. Download the document, which includes which areas the detectors should cover, at iams.org.uk/news. For our next report, the Australian Maritime Safety Authority has issued a refusal of access direction to Netherlands-flagged general cargo ship Maas Graat, banning the ship from entering Australian ports for 180 days. On the 6th of February, the Maas Graat was detained at Port Alma for improper stowage of dangerous goods, contrary to the International Maritime Organization's International Maritime Dangerous Goods Code. Despite this, during a port state control inspection at the same port on the 14th of November 2024, 9 months later, the Maas Graat was again detained for improper stowage of dangerous goods. It is the fourth detention since July 2022 for a Splyethoft Bevaartingskantoor BV operated ship failing to comply with the IMDG code's requirements for stowage of dangerous goods. The detention rate of the Splyethoft Bevaartingskantoor BV significantly exceeds the global average, 12.6% over the past 2 years, with multiple ships detained for International Safety Management Code failures and other safety critical deficiencies. AMSA said this reflects a broader pattern of non-compliance and poor performance, undermining the safety of seafarers and the Australian marine environment. Splyethoft is considered a poor performing operator, having been placed back on the list on the 8th of February 2024. Next up, several ships in Singapore and Rotterdam have recently reported issues after using cashew nut biofuel. Reported operational problems included fuel sludging, injector failure, filter clogging, system deposits and corrosion of turbocharger nozzle rings. CTI Maritech carried out extended gas chromatography mass spectrometry testing for very low sulfur fuel oil samples from the vessels. The results showed the fuel was blended with cashew nutshell liquid, CNSL, from undeclared source materials or production processes. CNSL, a non-FAME biofuel, is a naturally occurring byproduct of the cashew nut industry and acts as a low-cost alternative renewable fuel. It has high acid values and is therefore highly corrosive as well. High potassium found in CNSL blend fuels cause serious post-combustion deposits and corrosion of turbocharger nozzle rings. The latest version of ISO 8217 specifies the accepted biofuels such as FAME-based biofuels, hydro-treated vegetable oil, defined by the specifications of EN 14214, ASTM D6751 and EN 15940 respectively. These fuels are now established and acknowledged by equipment manufacturers, classification societies and flag administrations as drop-in fuels. There is no specification available for CNSL from any authorized body like above. CTI Maritech has recommended shipowners should not use 100% CNSL as a marine fuel or use CNSL as a blending component in marine fuel, which is contrary to the guidance by IMO on best practices for suppliers on the quality of fuel oil delivered to ships. Up next, Circular highlights importance of fire damper location. Companies should review the placement and labelling of fuel quick closing valves and assess the operation of fire dampers, advises the Norwegian Maritime Authority. The recommendation comes following a fire on a Norwegian vessel. During the incident, quick closing valves were used to shut off the diesel supply to the auxiliary and main machinery. However, the control handles for the quick closing valves for the emergency generator were located in the same cabinet, leading to the unintended shutdown of the emergency generator. On the same vessel, handles for closing fire dampers were located within a partially enclosed area. As a result, crew members tasked with closing the dampers had to enter a smoke-filled area, exposing themselves to smoke and requiring medical attention. The authority now recommends companies assess and improve the location and labeling of quick closing valves. More specifically, quick closing valves for the emergency generator should be positioned separately from those controlling the auxiliary and main machinery. Additionally, it is crucial that the crew members are familiar with the location and operation of these systems during inspections and drills. Alarm instructions should align with the procedures practiced during onboard drills. It added it advises companies and ship designers to position fire damper controls in a way that minimizes the risk of smoke exposure. For existing vessels, it recommends identifying potential risk areas and implementing corrective measures as necessary. During onboard fire drills, particular attention should be given to any areas that may lead to smoke exposure for the crew members. Next, the Australian Maritime Safety Authority has released its updated Surveyor Accreditation Guidance Manual Part 2. This manual outlines the standards and criteria required for the survey of domestic commercial vessels by accredited marine surveyors and recognised organisations, ensuring that accredited marine surveyors and recognised organisations adhere to consistent practices. Key changes include the introduction of updated technical standards to improve survey accuracy, enhanced safety protocols to ensure the highest level of vessel safety, revised operational criteria to streamline survey processes and increase efficiency. Surveyors and organizations are encouraged to review the manual thoroughly to ensure compliance with the latest standards and practices. The new version went into effect on the 1st of January this year. Read the updated manual at amsa.gov.au. In our next story, the American Bureau of Shipping has sent out a reminder on appropriate firefighting suits. It is essential for ship owners to equip their crew with suitable firefighting gear to ensure the preservation of lives and vessels in the event of a fire. Appropriate equipment should enable crew members to effectively combat fires in open air environments and enclosed spaces, all while ensuring their personal safety. Many suits on board are designed in accordance with the EN531 standard. However, this standard is designed for industrial workers exposed to heat and is not intended for firefighting. Moreover, some suits labeled under EN531 feature unprotected metal zippers, buttons or clasps, which can conduct heat and cause burns. A protective suit meeting the demands of firefighting is one complying with the European standard EN 469/2005, as noted below. Level 2 is required for firefighting in enclosed spaces. EN 469/2005 and its revised version EN 469/2020 also mandate a risk assessment to be made. The update also includes information on additional requirements for EU vessels, EMSA guidance, requirements for SOLIS vessels and its own recommended actions. You can read the reminder in the news section of our website. That's all we have for this month. Thanks for listening.